Boker Tov world, today's daf in Sechet Sota is daf Chof Aleph, and we are holding on the bottom of daf Chof Amud Beis. The last thing that we got up to was Yesh La Zechut Hayta Tola, Yesh Zechut Tola Shana, Shnatayim, Shalosh Shanim. Anyway, the Gemara wants to know that this Shita, who actually holds this? Because we don't find any Tana that holds that a schus could be Taylor for so long. 3 years? I mean, if we take a look at the various shitas in the Braita, none of them hold that. Lo Abba Yossi ben Chanan, v'lo Rabbi Elazar ben Yitzchak Ishkvar Dorom, v'lo Rabbi Yishmael, v'tanya. Im yesh la zechut olah la shlosha chodashim. The first approach of Abba Yossi ben Chanan learns out from the pasuk that the schus gives a maximum of 3 months before the water will work on her. What's the raya? Because since it says in the pasuk, what we're learning is v'nikta, v'nizra zera, so then that means that the lashon of nikia, she could remain nikia because of a schus up to the time that it's clear that she's pregnant, v'nizra zera. So it's from conception till the time that she's noticeably pregnant, is 3 months. So that's the maximum that it would give her. Shotan is Abba Yossi ben Chanan. Rabbi Elazar ben Yitzchak Ishkvar Darom Omer, no, it's 9 months. Because the Minikta v'Nizra Zera doesn't mean that there should be a noticeable embryo. Because we see that the Lashon of Zera in the Pasuk of Zera Yavdenu Yisupar Ladunai Lador. So over there it says that upon birth, in other words, the moment that a human being is ready to get out into the world and has begun the path of life, that's birth, that at that point, he's going to be the next in line to tell the next generation about the niflos of HaKadosh Baruch. So that means, Zera HaRotwi L'Saper, that he's already been born, 9 months essentially, he's ready to go out and tell the world about how wonderful HaKadosh Baruch Hu is. Okay, so then that's 9 months. And Rabbi Shmuel takes it even further. Rabbi Shmuel says 12 months, but nobody says 3 years. The Afa Pishe in Raya Ledavar, according to this, Rabbi Shmuel brings a Raya from a remez, not a real Raya, Zech Ledavar, Tichtiv, because we know that when Nebuchadnezzar had his horrible dreams, and he tells Daniel, Daniel explains to him what the dreams mean, and that basically, you know, there's not much hope for him, but I can at least give you something to do to ward it off for a while. So he tells the Nebuchadnezzar, Lehin Malka Malki Ishparala. So I'm telling you, great king, let you take my advice, Malki Lashon Nimlach. Take my advice. I hope you find it correct, because it's definitely correct. V'chata'ach b'tzedakafru, what you could do is you can do something to be paid all of the sins by giving tzedakah. V'avyatach b'michananyan, and you'll be able to be mechaper on your avinos by doing nice things for the poor. And that way, ain't avi arka b'shlavatach, and this way there will be time lengthening. So we'll give you an extension, basically. And he got that extension. But nonetheless, it says, Kolamata Nebuchadnezzar Malka Liktzat Yarchin Treasa. But in the end, it all came on Nebuchadnezzar's head, everything that had been predicted by the dream. And it was 12 months later. So because he listened to Daniel, so you see that there's a remnant that for 12 months it's possible for schus to be Taylor. So nobody holds 3 years. Says the Gemara, the truth is that Rabbi Shmuel's remez actually could be multiplied by three. 12 months times three. Why? Because Rabbi Shmuel actually found that the Pasuk mentions, Ashkech Krado Amar Vatani, Ko Amar Hashem, Al Shlosha Pishayedon, V'al Arba'a Lo Ashiven. Mashmah HaKadosh Baruch Hu will allow this extension to take place three times. So if 12 months takes place three times, it's 3 years. So that must be going a leap to Rabbi Shmuel. So why did Rabbi Shmuel say it's not a raya? It sounds like a very good raya. When it says that In practical terms, this dihui of the dream was 12 months, and now it's times 3. So why is it not a raya for the 12 months? Why is it only a zecher l'dav? Because there may very well be a big difference between the time that's given to a sota as an extension of the me'am harim than there would be given to an oved avodah zarah like Nebuchadnezzar. Because dilma shiny oivdei kerchovim, delo mifke dina alayu. Listen, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not really very makpid on oivdei kerchovim. So maybe he's ready to do an extension of 12 months for a guy like Nebuchadnezzar, but not for Jewish people. He doesn't have that kind of patience. Adarabba, we find that Midas Adin acts immediately, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't wait until you pile up a big cheshbon that you're never able to do anything with. And in general, Midas Adin is makpid. So for Rishoyim, like Rav Yekachon, well, I have to punish the Nebuchadnezzar Olam Hazeh. I can punish him in hell. So fine, delay it. But when it comes to a Bas Yisrael, over there maybe we don't put things off for that long. Therefore, Rabbi Shmuel didn't want to say that I have a raya, but I do have a remnant. Okay, then we say that Yesh Zchut or HaShalosh Shani, but it never explains what the Zchut is. What exactly is the Zchut? Barnea is tining that the Zchut is Nisach HaMayim. I don't think that that would be correct because women are not generally Isaac in Nisach HaMayim. We're talking about over here with the women. I don't think you're correct, Barnea. So what is this Zchut? Ilem is Zchut the Torah. Doesn't mean. Now here's where we start getting involved in this issue of the Limud Torah that we had from Ben Azai and all big machlokas about what is the situation with teaching your daughter Torah. Okay, so what is it? Is it the schus of learning Torah? V'ha'ina mitzuvah v'osahi. I mean, it doesn't make sense because zechus, what we would be looking for over here, is something that would be a major source of zechut for her to be able to put this off. But as we know, in general, a mitzuvah v'yaisa has much more zechut than an ena mitzuvah v'yaisa. So a woman who learns Torah, as the Rambam paskens, yesh lo zechut, but it's not the same zechut as a mitzuvah v'yaisa, which is a general principle. So they can't mean that. So what is it referring to? It must be referring to the zechut of a mitzvah. So that if she does mitzvahs, those mitzvahs can be megin to protect her from the Mayim HaMa'orim. But that's also a problem. Because Zechut HaMitzvah Mimagna Kulei Hai, I thought that a mitzvah is not really that all that powerful to be Megin. Because Vatanya, Et Zol Darash Rabbi Menachem Bar Yosi, Kiner Mitzvah V'Torah Or. Why is it that Talah HaKatuvat HaMitzvah B'Ner, when the Torah wants to describe a mitzvah, so it calls a mitzvah the equivalent of a lamp unto my feet. So the Torah, however, it calls or. There's a big difference between the two. Because the ner, obviously, is only a source of light. When you run out of energy, you run out of light. But light is energy. And basically, once that light has been emitted, it never disappears. That's the law of conservation. So you're never going to get rid of that light. And therefore, the difference is that ma ner, and there will help you out as long as it hasn't finished burning. That's true about a mitzvah too. A mitzvah is only while you're being Isaac in it. For that time, we'll see what that time is. As long as it shines. But the Torah is or. And light never runs out. I don't know whether the correct Russian really makes any sense here to say Megin. Makes much more sense, like the Surah Zashatz, Meir Lo Olam. Something is about the Ner. The Ner isn't Megin. So the Lush, it seems a little bit Meshubash, but in any event, in the same way that the Or lasts forever, so too the Torah ends up being Megin Al Olam. And we
really, is this like the Rambam describes that Shuvah should act like a shield to protect a person from the impending din?
No.
So it doesn't work in the same way?
No.
So what is this?
No, it's a different concept. Shuvah, no, don't confuse Shuvah.
It's not protecting. What is it, just pushing off the din? What is it doing?
No, well, if you'll wait till the tzedakah finishes, you'll see. So the Torah is making, and it says, "B'salecha tamshotach," referring to Olam Hazeh, "B'shoch b'cha tishmor alecha," referring to death itself, and "V'akitzot tayit sichecha," referring to Lasid Lovo after Techiyat Amitim. So that means that the Torah is there always. Mashal Adam Shaya Mahalech Bishon Laila Vafila. So we'll give you a mashal, then we're going to be able to analyze the mashal, and then we'll see what aspects it's referring to. So we have three stages. First is walking around in the depths of night. Everything is black and dark. So he is frightened of many things. Mityarei min hakotzim, umina pechatim, umina barkanim. Look, he can't see anything. So, I mean, he's got to tiptoe because he could be walking in the next minute on top of thorns. He could be falling into some type of gap. He could be going into a bush. He's also afraid of things coming after him. Chayara'a, listim. Plus, he doesn't really know where he's going because he's not 100% sure of which highway this is. Now, there's stages. He gets himself, let's say, a torch. So nizdam lo avukah shel ur. It lights up the area around him. So he's got a flashlight. He's got a flashlight. At least he's not going to fall into a hole somewhere or step into the thistle bush, right? But, I mean, that's going to protect him, that flashlight. It's not going to be protecting him from a lion. It's not going to be protecting him from muggers. And he still has no idea of where exactly this road is leading. Now, it gets to be sunrise. Okay, so it's Allah Muda Shachar. Not sunrise, but dawn. So there's a little bit of light in the sky. Once that comes around, the animals go back into their dens. That's just the way biology is. The listim are basically going back into their hiding places. But he's safe from that. But he still doesn't have enough light to be able to get a perspective of exactly where he's going. Then he finally gets to an intersection. At the intersection, there it's clear. There's signs to all directions. He knows exactly where he's at. At that moment, he's Nitzal Mikulam. We're going to go into each one of these things. So that means that we've got three different layers over here, as the Gemara will explain. What exactly is the Parshat Struck, and what the Gemara will ask. So the same thing is true over here. So basically we're saying there's all kinds of things that can happen to you. And there's all kinds of things that come after you. So there's different in Yonim. So when you have a mitzvah, so you've got a light, you've got a lamp, and therefore you're not going to fall into a hole. Mashenkein, the Torah is much more than that. That's going to stop him from things coming after you, meaning the Yetzer Hara. So it's going to be matzo you from Averis. So in other words, the mitzvah can be matzo from Puranut, and the Torah can be matzil to save you from chait. And then the crossroads, whatever that is, that the Gemara is going to explain, at that moment, then you can be sure of the road that you're on. So this is our first marshal. So another way to look at this relationship is that an avera can be mechaba a mitzvah, but an avera cannot be mechaba Torah. So the fact that a person falls into sin, okay, so that can get rid of the schus of a mitzvah. But there's no way that an avera can get rid of the light of Torah. So that's another difference. You could put out a candle, a lamp, but you can't put out light. And therefore, whatever it is that you do that is wrong, the person is oisek in avera. Now, avera usually means sexual sin. That's the way that we'll see that that's what we assume it is over here also. But that's not going to put out the Torah that he's learning. Shenema ma'im rabim lo yuchlu l'chabot et ahava. Doesn't matter how much water you pour over love, there's no way that you can erase that love and that ma'im rabim, even of avera. And the truth is that if we're talking about a mitzvah, so now all of this confirms what we were thinking. how could the schus of the mitzvah be the thing that's going to save this sotah, if what we see over here is a tremendous difference between the darga of the saving that the mitzvah will offer and that of what Torah will offer? It's two completely different orders of magnitude. And therefore, what would it mean that's to say if the sotah doesn't have the schus of Torah, so how is it that mitzvah would be sufficient to save her? If it says over here that it's a low level. Amar of Yosef, look, as long as a person is actually being oisik in a mitzvah, it is both levels. It's both magna umatzla. So then the mitzvah does have that keach to protect you from avera and to also to protect you from any kind of puranut that were coming your way. It's only be'idna de lo asigba. If you're not being oisik in the mitzvah, then you're right. This marshal kicks in. And it's not going to protect you from the muggers and from the wild animals. That's your yetzer hara. It's not going to protect you. But it still is going to save you. Iguna makna will save you from the puranut, but it's not going to save you from avera that's coming after you. The difference is that Torah, so it's not true what you're saying. You're making it seem that a mitzvah would never have the kayach that the Torah would have. But the truth is, as long as you're currently being oisik b'mitzvah, it could be making to the same extent, because v'araya it's matzah. So therefore, the seita actually can be zeicha through the mitzvahs that she did, that it's megin aleha, even though she's not being oisik this very moment. So it stops her from suffering the puranut of the water. Matkif lo rabba. The question is, asks, correct here, it seems to be rava, elamiata, what you just said doesn't make any sense. Doeg, achitofel, we have these great people, right? And I give you an example, doeg v'achitofel. They were very great people. They were being Isaac and Torah all the time. And boy, did they get totally screwed up. And it turned out that the Torah did not save them from doing averas. So then I don't understand. How can you claim that people like Doeg v'Achitofel, who were Isaac and Torah, why was the Torah not megin to protect them from their yetzer hara? So you can't be right. Hello, Amar Rava, I'll tell you. It isn't that the Torah is, even when you're not being Isaac in Torah, that it's going to be matz for you. I think Rabbi Yosef is wrong. Torah, be either the asikba, it's the Torah that can be matz for you from the Yetzer Hara only while you're being Isaac in it, not the mitzvah. And that Torah will actually protect you at that moment from the Yetzer Hara. But when you're not being Isaac in that Torah, it will protect you from being hurt by what it is that you did in the past, but it's not going to save you from the Yetzirah that's coming after you. Hetzulei lo matzla. Hashem came a mitzvah is never going to protect you from your Yetzirah. The only thing that the mitzvah will do is it will save you from puranut. So if you have the source of a mitzvah, it will save you from puranut. That's the difference. But I don't go so far as to say what Rabbi Yosef said, that the mitzvah is also going to be able to protect you, and the Torah will protect you from the Yetzirah forever. That is clearly not true, because we see it's not true. That's the whole point. Now, of course, that addresses what Alon was looking into earlier, that protection is tshuva, that actually it provides for you because of the Esek and Tshuva. That's a completely different darga. So therefore, I say, the pshat of the Seita, so far we have two pshat. According to Rabbi Yosef, the Seita is protected even by mitzvah, because mitzvah is shayach to be able to be matzio. According to Rava, it's not ever able to be matzil, and that's not the point. The point of the Seita is that it is megin, and that's true. You don't have to go so far to say what Rav Yosef says, that it will be matzil you from the Yetzer Hara. Ravina says, why don't we go back to what we said? I mean, basically, all of the pointers over here or to the fact that Torah is matzah, right? So I say, therefore, let's go back to that. It is the schus of Torah. Now, you're saying, but I mean, she's an Eina Metzuva V'Yosa, so her schus of Torah is not the thing to look for, is it? It is. But when it says the schus of Torah, it doesn't mean the schus of her learning. That's not the point. Because the Ka'amrit Eina Metzuva V'Yosa, it's true what you're saying, that there's no mitzvah in her personal learning, that Pakude Lo Mefakta. But is she not the source of all of the learning? I mean, isn't that the Kol Tomar LeBeit Yaakov, V'Tageid LeBnei Yisrael? Who is the one that makes her husband able to learn? Who is the one that gets her children to school and sees to it that they are educated and that ultimately they're going to be learning Torah? That's all her. So, Be'agra, the Makarian, Umasnayan Banayu, the fact is that they make it, the whole future of their children is coming from her. And they, those male children have a chiyuv. Well, she's not going to have less of a reward than the mitzvah v'yaisa because she's the one that makes it possible. We don't have to look to her learning. And furthermore, natronu l'gavrayu adat b'beit rasha. They'll send their husbands away and they'll go even to other places to be able to sit and learn. They won't see their husbands for weeks at a time. That's a tremendous schus. So, Milo Pagan, what do you think? That they don't have that schus HaTorah? Of course they have the schus HaTorah. So why are you looking into their personal learning? That isn't the point. Okay, meanwhile, I'm just curious about the metaphor that you were using about the guy on the road. So I understood that there were two approaches to the difference of level of the torch and the level of the light. But nobody explained to me, what is this last thing about, but when he gets to the Parshas Drachim, so at the intersection, then he's going to know the highway that he's on. What part was that? Was that referring to? Omer Rav Chisda, ze talmid chacham v'yom hamita. That's talking about a Talmud Chacham on the day of his death. Until the day of his death, he doesn't know how messed up he's going to make his life. Maybe he'll perish chas v'chalila min haTorah. Maybe he'll give up. Maybe he'll say, forget about it. So then, if that's the case, he's on the wrong road. He only knows that he's on the right road when he gets to the intersection of Olam HaZeh and Olam HaBa. That's what it's talking about. So if he sees that he managed to negotiate his entire life, and he's still mechubar to Torah, and he wasn't perish at the very end, that's what it's referring to. Rav Nachum Bar Yitzchak says, no, this is talking about something else. This is a Talmud Chacham who gets to a Madrega of Yiras Chet. That's the point. So once he was able to achieve that Darga of Yiras Chet, so then he's not going to be able to fall into the clutches of the Yetzer Hara. But for somebody who's learning, but never reaches any Darga of Yiras Chet, that learning is not going to guarantee him. That's the Al Tiftach Ba'atzmecha Ad Yom Motcha. You never know where the hell you're going, literally, because there's nothing that's going to prevent you from actual chait. Mar Sutra Amar, Ze Tamid Chacham Disalkalei Shemaitata Aliba Dehilchata. This is a completely different issue. What we're talking about over here is not the question of being saved from chet, as Tosis points out, because that's not what it's talking about over here. But the problem over here is that, yes, Torah definitely does protect him, but he doesn't know that he's on the right road, meaning the right road in terms of the way that his Torah will be consistent with the way that the world has to develop. So like we saw by Yehuda earlier, we understand that it's possible for a person to be Eisek B'Torah, continually Eisek B'Torah, but he's not going to be Mikubal. And that's what happened to Yehuda until Moshe Rabbeinu was Bispal for him. There it was in terms of Mesifta Derakia. But here what we're talking about, that a person can never be sure that he's going in the path that is connected to the way the Olam is. We're not talking about anymore about being matzil him. And that is a disaster. So if he's zoicha to reach a time at which he sees that people are being responsive to his learning, so then he feels that his life is fulfilled, not only in terms of not being nechshal, and not only in terms of being saved for pranut, but knowing that his life is on the right path. That's not referring to Hatzalah. This is how Tosef understands it. Davar acher, another way of talking about the relationship of ner and or, in terms of mitzvah to Torah, respectively, is that an avera, we said, is bechaba mitzvah, the ein avera mechaba Torah. There's no way that you can ever put out the light of Torah in a person, despite avera. Omer of Yosef, Darshe Reb Menachem Bar Yossi Lahikrot Yisinai. That's mamish. That's the real pshat. The Omalei Darshua Doeg V'Achitofel Achi Lo Ratfu Batar David. David HaMelech had tremendous enemies. Half of Sefer Tehillim is all about David HaMelech's enemies. The Mizmor Shir Chanukat HaBayit LeDavid is all about how the building of the Beis HaMikdash at the end, Bimei Shlomo Beno, is a vindication of David HaMelech's life. That vindication took so long because of the fact that he was constantly being near Dov. So the reason that they were Rodef him is because they did not understand the drasha of Rav Menachem Bar Yossi. They assumed that because David HaMelech, I mean, not Chas V'Shalom literally, but because they believed that David HaMelech was someone who was nichshal and eishes ish, because of that, that Kodesh Baruch Hu wasn't going to save him, and that he lost all of his dveikus to the Shechina, and now they can go after him. This was like for them a great opportunity. Let's go after David HaMelech. My daughters, they said, listen, it says in the Torah V'lo Yireh Becha Ervat Davar that if HaKadosh Baruch Hu sees the Ervat Davar V'shav Me'acharecha, so the Shechina will turn aside. If the Shechina turns aside, so then that's why they said, Redov Ki Ein Matzil, chase after David HaMelech, wipe him out. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not with him anymore and is not going to save him. If they had only realized that the real meaning is like Rav Menachem Bar Yossi, that is never referring to the love of Esek Patera, they didn't understand that may be true about mitzvah, so then they would have been more careful, and they would have realized that David HaMelech is not wiped out just because of his Eishes Ish, supposed. And because of that, they would have been careful not to attack him, and all of this horror in their own lives could have been avoided.
Maybe were they looking for excuse? They really wanted to take David out, and this was the excuse, or this is what turned them against David?
No, they really were looking for an excuse. That's the pshat. You know, now's the time to get him, is the point. They wouldn't have been right of him because it's the Ein Matzil. There's no one to save him. So if they would have realized there's someone to save him, they wouldn't have started up. But it's not saying that they really were motivated by taking revenge for the horrible David HaMelech. They wanted to get rid of him anyway. There was always this underlying jealousy that we see in their relationship from the beginning. Then that the pasuk that says, "Im yitein ish et kol hon beito bi'ava," the person would give every penny that he owns to buy love. Boz yavuzula. People will laugh him off. It's insane to think that you would sell a minute of love for all of this guy's money. What is that referring to? Amra Ula, that's not referring to what you might think. It's not referring to the situation of Shimon Achiazariah. Shimon Achiazariah appears mamish in the Mishnah and his Vachim. And it's not Rabbi Yochanan and his relationship to the Beis HaNasi. Now, in those two cases, the person, why was Shimon called the brother of Azariah? I mean, usually we refer to a person by his father, not by his brother. Shimon Achiazariah is because Azariah had made a deal with Shimon. He is going to support Shimon, and he's going to split the schar of his learning. Now, this is obviously part of what we just spoke about in terms of the sota, that she is Mekayin, she is responsible for her husband's learning and her children's learning. So she actually is palgon bad. And then she gets the schar directly to her. So she does have the schar of a mitzvah v'yaisa. So here the question is, we're referring to the schar of Torah in the same breath as being love that you can never extinguish, no matter how much you pour on it. So does that mean that it can't be sold? Boz yavuzulo. If it can't be sold, so then that means you can't make a deal like this. Because it's ridiculous. So you're going to give me $1 million a month, and for that you're going to get schus of the Torah for a crummy $1 million? Are you nuts? That's what seems to be saying. And yet what we learned is that when you're responsible for that learning, it's not that you're buying the learning, it's that you become a chelik of that learning. Therefore, explains the Gemara now, when we talk about Boz Yavuzulo, we mean you'll laugh him off by thinking that he can buy your learning. Well, this is not buying your learning, but there was a case of buying your learning. And that was the case of Hillel and Shevna. So what happened over there was, we know Hillel spent his life learning in tremendous depths of poverty. That's the whole story in the Gemara about Hillel climbing up to here in the snow and so on and so forth. And Shevna was a very rich businessman. And after all of these years of Hillel's suffering, Shevna comes to him and says, listen, I see, you know, you're really in a bad state. I'll start taking care of you. And in exchange for that, split your Torah with me. I said, what, are you crazy? You can't buy my Torah for any amount of money in the world. It has to be exactly this idea that you're being ma'afshir, my Torah. Otherwise, your money can't buy any Torah. Yotzta batko, so when Shevna said, let's split. Vandatana rochveli floga, batko came out and said, a man can give every penny he's got. It ain't going to help. You can't buy it. This mamish is a wonderful mice that happened to my son, to Hanina. So a very rich man told me this story. I didn't hear it from him. He wouldn't tell me, of course, such a thing. Whatever. This very rich guy tells me, he calls me up, he calls me, just had the craziest conversation with your son. So I offered him, he didn't have any money, Hanina. So I offered him, I'll support you. So your son asks me, why are you offering me to support me? Well, I often do this kind of thing. I support Talmid Chachomim that I see they're serious learners and so on. So he says to him, if you're trying to buy any schus of the Torah, it's not going to work. I'm not selling you a penny. So if you believe that this is the best deal that you could ever get in your life, fine, we can make it. But if to you it's a way of giving tzedakah and you think you're going to get something, forget about it, I'm stealing. So he says, so I told him, I have to tell you the truth, I don't think it's the best deal I ever made. Well, he says that I'm not interested. It's exactly this story, right? Okay, then the Mishnah goes on to say that Ben Azai said, Chayav, you see from here, that you're Chayav lelamed et bito Torah. Now, I would like, we didn't really have time to go into, but I'd like to explain to you, when we say that you're Chayav lelamed Torah, because of the fact that this way she will know that, I mean, that's the pashta, she will know that if she is Mizana and that the Mayim doesn't work, the reason the mayim doesn't work is because of the schus. Now, the simple way of reading that is absolutely nutty. You know, make sure that your daughter knows that if she's going to commit adultery, there's a good reason why the mayim. What kind of awful pshat is that? The pshat is, I believe, the pshat is amazing. Really, really amazing. And it's not just to tell her the inyanim of Satan. What Ben Azai is pointing out is that the relationship of a woman to life has to be in terms of Torah in exactly the same way that a man's relationship is in terms of Torah. Right? I mean, if the Torah is given to work, if we're concerned with her being able to actually face the Mesotah, what does that tell you about women? That tells you that what we're looking at is something that makes sense to her and that she's able to relate to and understand. Not that she's going to think, I got away with murder because HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't know what he's talking about. Obviously. What does that tell you? It tells you that there's a fundamental level of background that is given as part of the human condition. That's not called Asik Patera. In the same way that you understand that obviously I need to know the halachas in order to be Mekayim the mitzvahs, does anybody argue on that? Everybody says, of course, a woman has to know all of the halachas that she's mechuyevet in, and she's supposed to be learning that. It's not a din in Talmud Torah, it's a din in the ma'afsher of life and the ma'afsher of mitzvahs. I'm telling you, says Ben Hassan, that the Torah is taking much more than that as a given. The given of the Torah is that we're talking to a woman who is not going to be like some Meshuggah Arab suspicious woman from the 10th century who's going to be walking into the Beis HaMikdash with the Meis Seita and going, that's not what it's about. So how do you expect that you are going to have a population like that if you're not able to give over the basic ideas of Torah to your children? So what, you don't think you're mechuyev to do that? That's what he said. It's a tremendously telling argument. The Torah is meant for people. It's not meant for animals without education. So that's a given, Tainus Ben Hazai. It's an extremely powerful argument if you see it in that language. So how is she supposed to know? You're telling her, let's bring a woman in and do the Meis Sota. What do you think that is? Some kind of suspicious nonsense? That's how she's going to see it? Not understand everything that's going on? It's horrific. It's mamisha. It's such a violation of the Kedusha Satera. How can you think such a thing? This is what Ben Hassai types. Rebbe Eliezer Omer, Kol HaMelamed Et Bito Torah, Melameda Tiflut. Well, how can you say such a horrible thing? I understand. Torah is sexual nuttiness? Making her a man? It's disgusting. Tiflut Salkadaita, how could you mean that? No, I mean that what you're doing is you're providing tools for Tiflut. Because, look, Ben Hassai, what you're saying is that if there's this minimum level of what you call civilization, it's a civilized mind. It's a mind that has the yashrus of understanding Torah, that's not built around all kinds of stupid beliefs and superstitions and so on. Let me tell you something. Superstition, in the place of a human being who has no other controls, is very useful. Take a look at what it is that the church did to provide for controls. It prevented people from ever having an education. It turned them into absolutely confused and ignorant nobodies, but because of that, they were controllable. Suppose you give an education to a modern human. What happens to that education? They use it to go and to spread falsities, to destroy their own life, to fall into, like we were talking about in the Parshas HaShavua, to go and to be twittering away about how it is you can fitter away all your life. And it gives them more and more. This, are you doing them a favor? You believe you're doing them a favor. So let me ask you, when it comes to Torah, okay, what would a woman, let's define what it is that a woman is most looking for. Now let's take a look in terms of Olam Hazeh, and then you'll understand how it is that her Torah is going to be used. Woman's got an opportunity to have a fantastically successful life in Olam Hazeh. So her husband is ready to bring her a life of majestic riches. Offers her this, but it's going to mean that he's going to be away in the office for 2 weeks at a time. You think that means anything to her? You think that's what she wants? The bottom line is she would prefer sex. That's the bottom line. And since that's an actual, if it's presented as an actual choice, then that shows you what it is that's most important. And if that's what's most important, then that means the utilization of the supposed civilized mind that you are providing her is going to be used for what's most important for her. The more civilized she becomes, the more manipulative she becomes, the more dangerous she becomes, and the more likely to spread nonsense she becomes. So why? What favor are you doing for her? Now, again, as the Rambam clearly explains, This is only true about your forcing teachings on your daughter. Obviously, if she is motivated to understand, of course you're supposed to teach her. The only issue is that the chiyuv of teaching, like your chiyuv to teach a son, and you beat the Torah into him, is not applicable to a female. That's the point. You don't do that, because what you end up with is, I don't know, women's lib, all kinds of women making up midrashim, dancing around in the with a sefer Torah as if that's the most important thing in the world. All you do is you substitute other elements, which are just other ways of being superstitious, and now you're backing it with supposed Torah. That's all that it will do. That's the point of Rebbe Eliezer, but not chas v'shalom that you're not supposed to be teaching. Omer Rebbe Abo, my time at the Rebbe Eliezer, dechtiv ani chokhma shachanti orma. So what does that mean? I am wisdom, but I live in the midst of sneakiness. Orma has all kinds of different meaning. Armimut, to become sneaky, to become cunning, to become dangerous. Kivan shenichlesa chachma ba'adam, nichlesa imo armumit. There's no way to separate this. The more a person becomes self-aware, the more dangerous they become to themselves. And that's the Mosif Da'at, Mosif Machov. So don't think that you're necessarily doing a human being a favor. So why am I teaching my son? Because I have no choice. Because the Torah says, you are mechuyev to put your son into this awful situation. And that way, now it's going to be up to him to save himself. But for you to do that to your daughter, and you feel you're doing this as a favor? Why? V'rabbanan. So what about Ben Azai? What does he do with Ani chokhma shachanti orma? Oh, he says, that's an amazing thing. Mimoyle let Rabbi Yossi b'Rabbi Chanina. The Omer of Yossi b'Rabbi Chanina. Ein divrei Torah mitkaimim, el b'mi shema'amid atzmo arom aleihem. You're only going to be able to be mekayim divrei Torah if you're ready to be stripped naked for divrei Torah. Shenemar, ani chokhma shachanti orma. So now the portion of meaning in this is that I don't need to have money. I don't mind if I don't have clothes, so to speak. But the deeper meaning, very interesting, this is brought both by Rashi, and there's a beautiful Meiri, whoa, that speaks it out, in which this is something that's so nogea. He says, you have to be very cunning in understanding the way your mind works. That's what it means. You're going to have to make a decision. We're talking about the kiyum of your learning. You're going to have to make a decision about how to learn in order to be mekayim your learning. Now, there's many people who will tell you the best way to remember your learning is to spend 2 weeks on a daf, and that way, you know, if you really spend a lot of time on it, you'll remember it. There's other people who will tell you that in those 2 weeks, you could have learned that daf 500 times. And going over it again and again and again, and that's the way you'll remember it. Well, says the Miri, different minds work in different ways. So you have to learn how it is that your mind responds to input. That's the orma. And that way you can be mekayim your learning. I'm not talking about how to learn, but how to be mekayim how you learn. It's not a lovely chat. So that's the orma. The orma is to know yourself. Beautiful. Amar Rabbi Yochanan. In divrei Torah mitkamim el b'misha meisim atzmo k'misha eino. There's a deeper nekuda over here. You have to make yourself an individual who takes nothing for himself and takes himself for granted in any way. As far as you're concerned, hachochma me'ayin timatzai. It's the closer you are to ayin. We've spoken about this in terms of Meshuva Arim. Anachnu ma. That's the Tela Eretz al-Bali ma. The more that this is about me, the less meaningful it is. Rabbi Yeshua, getting back to the continuation of the Mishnah. So Rabbi Yeshua says, Reitz Adam Bekav Vitiflus Mitisha Kavim. Exactly what does that mean? No, it means not that you're putting one against the other. In other words, I'd rather have a Kav if there's Tiflus Imo than having Tishat Kavim and Prishut, which is basically a hierarchy of desires. So you have to understand what is most likely to be used for your Torah, for your Torah to be used. And then we have that last beautiful piece of the Mishnah. So the Mishnah talks about people who destroy the world. So a chosid shaita destroys the world. What exactly is a chosid shaita? How can that be chosid shaita? Well, that would be someone who sees a woman drowning, and he says, well, I mean, you can't expect me to go look at a woman who's drowning. I mean, she's a woman. I mean, I'd have to look at her if I'm going to save her. So you better call somebody else. Amazing. And what is a Rosh Aron? Amar Rav Yochanan, Rosh Aron is somebody who's clearly doing an Avera, and he does it in a way that is very sneaky, in which he's able to get it done. This is a complicated situation. So what does he do? He wants to go to court with someone. He doesn't announce his intention right away. So what he does is he goes to the person that he wants to ultimately select as a judge in his case, and he invites him over for, you know, coffee, discusses the whole situation that he's got. I got a situation with so-and-so. I don't know what to do. This is what I'm thinking. I mean, it seems to me that, you know, he's really in the wrong. What do you think? You know, he talks it over with this guy. This guy has no idea that he's in line to be a judge in the case. So, okay, so he hears what that person has to say. Now, obviously, if he knew he was a judge, then he would be over on the Sis Hashem Hashav, as the Gemara says. But here, the person who's telling him the things is over on Lo Tasi Shem Hashav, as we darshan both, that the person has no right to tell an individual who's going to be a judge. So he's a rush. What's his sneakiness? His sneakiness is that he didn't let the guy know that he's a judge. Okay, so what? So now he has to posel himself as a judge, right? So anyway, he's not going to be able to judge the case. That's the problem. Because we paskin that if a person is in a position where he's being influenced by other considerations, if he informs the other person that, listen, Mr. X has chosen me as a judge in the case, I'm not really suitable to be a judge in the case because I didn't know it, but he spoke to me about this before. So are you interested? Am I being a judge in the case, or do you feel that I have to posel myself? So if the guy says that, I accept it and I understand that you'll do your best to be as objective as you can be, even though I understand that, of course, the Torah says that you've been influenced, so then he's allowed to be a judge. So this guy, who's Rosh Aron, is taking advantage of that psak. He figures that he can get away with both. So he could do the Avera and he'll still be able to get the advantage out of it. That's a Rosh Aron. That's the pshat. Another explanation. Rabbi Abba Omer, this is a guy. This guy is brilliant, okay? What happens is he's got a lot of leket, shikha, peya. He's got a lot of stuff to give to the poor. Now, who's allowed to take it? Only somebody who doesn't have that minimum of matayim zuz in cash, right? The guy's liquid, he's not allowed to take matanot levyonim. Now, this man has got a lot of very poor relatives that he would like to give all of this money to, all of this tvua to. And there's another guy coming along who also has a right to this tvua. So what does he do? He gives another, here's $100 to you. Now giving him that $100 means that now he can't take any of the leket shekel peah. Now for that $100, he can give his relatives $100,000 worth of tvua and so on. So that is considered to be a Rosh Aron, because he's really only giving that money so that the person should not be Zeicha. It's not. Mishi Yeshal Matayim Zuz, Lo Yito Leket Shekel Peah Umayser Ani. But if he has even one Zuz less, and this guy's going to give him that Zuz, right? But if he had only one Zuz less, he could take $1,000 worth at that point, because now he's somebody that is right. Hare Zeyito, Afil Elef, if not Nimlo Ba'achat. So this guy's got it all worked out. How much tzedakah he should give to the people he doesn't want to give tzedakah to. And that way he can get money for the people that he does want tzedakah to. This is all sneakiness that is based on rishas, because it's all manipulation. Rabbi Asi, I'm Rabbi Yochanan. Now, this is a tremendous opening. Because what happens is like this. Remember, there's a concept of chasim muatim that we spoke about a lot in ksuvas. So the din is that if the ksuva, remember, provides for the support of the daughters to be able to get married, but not for the yerusha of the daughters, and the parnasa of the daughters is only in the event that there is no chasim that are b'nei chore, and they're not mishubarim, so they haven't been sold to anybody else. The din over there is that the boys have to let the girls take first, and if there's not enough to go around, that's called nechasim muatim. So then let the boys be mechazer al haptachim, let them go big money at doorsteps, but the women are protected. The women folk are protected. Now over here, this guy, somebody's father dies. There's a couple of males, a couple of females. He knows there's not much money. So he goes and he tells the males, listen, before the girls get to court and the court issues an order providing them for their parnasa, sell today. And once it's sold, then it's no longer in the chasim b'nei chorin. And then the court's not going to be able to collect from you. So he gives that eitza, and to give an eitza like that, it's none of your business. Bishlama, a person does this. The kids would do it themselves. So they're trying to protect themselves. They're nasty. But you can't call them a Rosha Orum. But somebody who gets involved in someone else's business in this fashion is a Rosha Orum. That's the pshat. Abaya Omar, listen, there's another way that this could be done. Let's say in a case where a person assigns a gift to someone with the understanding as follows. You get this property until you die. When you die, this property should be given to Mr. So-and-so. Okay, so there the halacha is. It's basically kinyan peirot, and the recipient has a kinyan peirot until he dies, and then the definition of who owns the field is that it then goes to the second guy who's supposed to be left for when this person dies. He goes ahead and gives an eitzah, to sell while you're alive, and that way you complete it, and there's nothing left for this other guy. And that is Rav Shimon Gamliel Shita. That if he did so, then that Kinyan Peres was the equivalent of Kinyan Aguf, and it's a good sale. So somebody who gives an eitzah to someone else, and it's none of his business. Limkor ben achasim, Rav Shimon ben Gamliel, meaning, Titania, nechasai lecha v'acharecha leploni. So suppose we had a gift like that. V'yarad harishon u'machar v'yachal. The first guy goes and sells it, and now he's using the money. The deal is, says Rebbe, that the second guy who was in line, he is able to recover it from the people that bought it. Because the person who sold it only had a right to the peirot. He can't sell more than he owns, can he? So he could only sell to the other people the same rights he had. He had a right to the peirot as long as he was alive. They have a right to the peirot as long as he, the seller, is alive. The moment that he dies, the guy who was next in line can say, excuse me, gentlemen, this is my property. It was left to me as a kinyan aguf. But Rav Shimon ben Gamliel says, no, not true. Kinyan peiros is the equivalent of kinyan aguf to sell. And therefore, ein l'sheni elamash shi'erishon, if the second guy comes and there's nothing left and he sold it, he's never going to be able to recoup that loss. Number five of the possible meaning of, or included in the meaning of a Rosh Ha'orum, says Rav Yosi Bar Chama, Omer of Sheshes, this is a guy who is machria acherim b'orchotav. This is a tremendous insight. This is a person who tells people, learn from me how to act. Nobody in his right mind, except a maniac, will tell people, take my life as a model, right? That's obvious. And therefore, the only reason he would be doing that is because he's trying to set up a model life, which is not his life. Actually, he is a vicious adulterer. He's a robber. But the more he can set his life up externally as a model life, the more he can get away with, right? So any guy that says, take my life as your model, that's a Rosh Orum. You can be absolutely sure about that. That's such a beautiful insight. Another pshat This is already, whoa, this is already six pshatim. Says Rabbi Zreika Omer of Huna, this is someone, when you ask him a halacha, he's always machmir. You find out, for himself, he's always mako. But he's not going to be mako for anybody else. He'll be machmir for everybody else. So that's also called a Rasha Aron, because he's a Rasha for telling other people to do things, not to do things that he himself does. And nobody knows, so it's very sneaky, setting himself up as this big tzaddik. And the last shot is, as Ula says, this is someone who is kara, vishana, veloshimesh, tamidei chachamim. This is classic. This is somebody who knows a lot of chumash. And he even knows Mishnah. And he knows all of the pshatim, he knows the malbim, the medrash, whatever. But he never learned how to learn. So there was no shimush of Talmidei Chachamim. He does not have the patience, the interest to hear what a Talmud Chacham is going to tell him about how to understand this, how to think about it. And yet he sets himself up as, you know, puts up this website, putting out his own Parsha sheet. He's got everything all worked out. Everybody thinks, gosh, you know, if he knows all of this, he must really be a Talmud Chacham. But the guy is basically an Amoritz who's setting himself up, therefore, as a Rosha Orum. He's Orum because people will think, well, listen, he knows so much, you know, he must be a real Talmud Chacham. But he's a Rosha because he has no right to rely on what it is that he's saying without really understanding Shimush Talmidei Chachamim. And in fact, a person like that, Koran v'shana, but lo shimesh tamir chachomim, Rabbi Elazar, this is basically an Amoritz. And he's totally ignorant. And therefore, he has all of the dinim of an Amoritz. He touches something, it becomes tame to people who are Purushim. He tells you he took off Trubas and Maestras. You can't believe him. It doesn't matter how much he was Koran v'shana. Rav Shmuel bar Nachmani Amar, why are you giving him such a lofty title as an Amoritz? An Amoritz is somebody who cares about the world. He doesn't care about the arts. He's a boor. He's a total and absolute boor because he doesn't even have any decency. If the person is pretending like this, so basically he's not correct to even call him an Amoritz. It's true he's an Amoritz, but don't call him that. Rabbi Yonah Omar, he's the equivalent of a kuti. He's basically, it's like, you can't even drink his wine. You can't even eat his food. Because if he doesn't care to be Mishamish Tamir Chachamim, so then who knows what he's Makbana, what he isn't Makbana. Ravacha Bar Yaakov Omer, Areze Magosh. He's like one of the Magosh. Those were the ones who were the, you know, the magicians, astrologers. They were the belief system of the Parsian. So why do we call him a Magosh? Because he's a trader in illusions, a trader in deceptions. He doesn't know what he's doing, doesn't know what he's saying, and presents himself as an authority without being mashamish tamidei chachamim. Okay, we'll see more about this tomorrow. Sorry for keeping you a little bit, didn't know precisely where to stop, but Baruch Hashem, we've got some serious, serious insights here. Very, very nageya. See you, Bezrat Hashem, tomorrow. With the Lord's good help. Go to everyone. Besurot tovot, Yeshuot v'nechamot.